I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, July 26th, 2020, and this is episode 78 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing is that I got a new pillow. I had been looking for pillows because I needed a new one. I hadn't gotten a new pillow in many, many years. And every morning I wake up and my neck is stiff. And sometimes I just feel like you're in your 40s and everything is just creaky a little bit. And I need to stretch before I can do anything. And so it occurred to me that my pillow could be to blame. And so once you start looking for pillows, Facebook and other websites are going to show you lots of ads. And I saw all kinds of weird pillows, little square pillows and all kinds of foam ones. So the one I decided to try is called Sutera, and it's got like an indentation for your neck. And it also has on the sides, it's like cut in so you can stick your arms in. So if you're a side sleeper or a stomach sleeper like me, you can, because I have a problem when I sleep, my arms fall asleep and they get all tingly and it's very disconcerting. Anyway, long story short, I really like this pillow. I've been using it for about a week and I feel better rested, and I can stick my arm in when I'm on my side or on my stomach and my arms don't fall asleep, which is huge for me. So it's really improved my quality of life in the past week. And I guess we'll see if it continues, but I recommend this pillow. I'm not an affiliate or anything. I'm getting no money for this, but it has helped me. So it says it's for backside and stomach sleepers. And I've never been able to really sleep on my back with any real regularity. I feel like a vampire when I sleep on my back, like I'm in a coffin, just like staring at the ceiling. So it's always side or stomach for me. But apparently it's good for all types of sleeping. So hopefully that helps you out. I also heard from several people within the past week or two who listened to the podcast and have started at the very beginning. And so I guess they won't hear this for a few weeks or months, but I get it. Like, I think I'm a completionist. I like to start at the beginning of things, but this kind of podcast, which is just sort of like a weekly update, it doesn't really require you to start at the beginning. Although I guess it would probably make sense for, you know, to understand what's the ongoing things that happen. I do try to summarize without repeating myself too much for people who are starting right now. And this is your first episode. So if this is your first episode, welcome. And if you started it from the beginning at some point since I started it, thanks for catching up. Or I guess you're probably not caught up, because by the time you hear this, I'll be in the future. Okay. Writing update. I am looking at my schedule again, because I will have to be doing two projects at once, which is not my favorite thing. It used to be something that I was good at, and I feel like I can be good at it again. It will just take some planning. Like, I look back at different periods of my life when I really did amazing things. You know, I started my business while I was working full time initially. Then I moved to a job where I was working 28 hours a week. And then I took on another job. So I was working at two different universities, both part-time, while I was building my business, which was a lot. Even further back, I went to graduate school while I worked full-time. I look back at those times and was like, how did I have the energy to do all of those things? Like, how did I manage it? I don't remember, but I know I did it. So I can do it again. I will be revising two different things at the same time. So when I do work on two different projects at the same time, I prefer to be like drafting one, revising another, but that is not how this is working out for August and September. So it's just going to take some planning and sleeping, going to bed early, waking up early, making sure that I have as much energy as possible. I might have to do like a weird eating thing to maximize my energy. By weird eating thing, I mean like a whole 30 or something. Try not to be stressed about it, but it is going to be, I think I called it robust, and even more robust, it's robuster. In the actual writing that I did this week, did we talk about this last week, my big plot board? So I was doing the MIDI plot board with the little stickies for single POVs, And then I realized I'm going to have to break out the big plot board. So I used my whiteboard. I wasn't really using it for much. It had a couple things on it, but I just transferred them to sticky notes on my desk. I have my colored stickies. These are 3x3s. And I'm getting to the end of some of them. Well, especially after this process. So I'm going to have to make a run to Staples to get some more stickies. One color per POV. And then across the whiteboard, I have my acts. And so in a traditional plot board, and I learned this technique from Diana Peterfreund, who came to give a workshop many years ago that was just so great and has stayed with me all these years. She did a workshop at Maryland Romance Writers on plot boards. And it was one of the best ones we've ever had in all the years that I've been in MRW. So you split a board into four columns. Because act two, if you're doing the three act structure, act two is double the length of the other acts. Some people do it a four act structure. I still call it three acts. So act one is one row. Act two is the middle two. Act three is the bottom. Because I have all these POVs, my act two is actually three rows, but you know, whatever. And, so this is as I'm revising Requiem of Silence. I had to break out the big plot board to be able to see how everything worked together with all of these different POVs. So my pattern was, I started small. I started with the individual POVs, like the one that needed the most work, then another one that needed some work, and I worked that out. Then I went big again, and I did an outline on paper. I think it was on the computer. I used a text file. I'm a big fan of plain text documents with no formatting at all. So it just reduces the number of decisions I have to make in terms of font and font size. Yes, you could use the default, but Word actually takes a longer time to open up on my computer. So I do a lot of brainstorming and planning in plain text documents using BB Edit on the Mac, but you could use Notepad or Text Edit. Anyway, so I went big. I did an outline in my text editor, kind of transferring what I had done on the mini plot board and then looking at all of that. Then I went small again to flesh out the plots a little bit more. Then I went big again and I got the big plot board. So this process of planning the revision has had that pattern, big to small, big to small, big to small, as I clarify some things and then make sure that they integrate well with the whole. And that seems to be a really good technique for something as complex as this book is. So I was also using the basic Save the Cat beat sheet for each plot line to make sure that I had the beats together, you know, the little plot board in conjunction with this beat sheet for each plot line, and then getting the big view for the flow of the scenes and trying to get a sense of the pacing. I think the pacing and the flow of the scenes is the same thing. I don't honestly spend a lot of conscious thought on pacing. I think I do that more intuitively because I'm not exactly sure how one goes about consciously pacing a novel. It's all about feel to me. So I look at my overarching plot line, my big plot board, and I just sort of like run through the scenes and I'm like, okay, where does this scene end? Where does the next one begin? How long has it been since we've seen this other person? For the most part, it's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, but there are some in terms of like the main three plot lines. I alternate them, but there are times when you're going to get a bigger chunk of one than another. And so in those instances, when you go back to the plot line that you haven't been with for a while, you might need a little bit of reminding. Some of them are going to end on kind of cliffhangers, and then you're not going to find out what happens for 2 or 3 or 4 chapters. And so that is all pacing, but I can't say that I have like a method of dealing with that. It's just, yeah, that doesn't quite feel right. Let's shift this around. It feels like it's been too long, or that didn't end in a cliffhanger. So I do have to remind you when I come back to this chapter. It's all just a vibe, you know, which is a lot of what writing is. I mean, you're going to have a process for some things and other things. It's just going to be that feels right or that doesn't feel right. And when it doesn't feel right, then you have to apply a process to it. That's how I go about it. So yeah, that's basically been my week. I think I will be ready to start writing hopefully Tuesday. I'm going to do some writing today, and I have a checklist of things that I need to make sure I know before I start the actual writing. And once I get through the checklist, I will do the schedule to see what day is it, when do I want to be done with this phase of it, and based on the deadline that I have for it now. But I feel really good. I feel so much better about this now than I did before. Like, I knew something was wrong with this book, and now I feel like I'm addressing the big things. I'm sure there'll be a lot of little things that'll slip through the cracks, but I have this plan taking shape, and I feel so much better about it than I did before. And it's really a good feeling. Like, at the end of the day, you know, the only thing we can control as authors is the book, the words on the page. I can't control who buys it, how many people buy it, who reviews it, if they like it. I can only control whether I like it. And I'm getting to the point where I think I'm going to really like this book. And I did not like this book before. So that is wonderful. It's like a victory. As part of this planning, I started the 7th notebook of the Earthsinger Chronicles series, Notebook G. So I letter them all, I put stickers on them all, and the stickers are just kind of random based on the stickers that I have around at that point in time. This is the checklist if you're on the video. I have it on a sticky note on the front of the notebook. I thought that Notebook E would be the last one, and then I needed F, and now I needed G, and I'm already like, a dozen pages into Notebook G of this series. Notebook G will be the last notebook of the Earthsinger Chronicles. This notebook should take me through this revision and the revision of the last novella. I use these moleskin craft paper cover blank inside journals, the Kahir? I don't know how to say that. And I'm on notebook 7, and which I guess, you know, it's 7 books, 4 novels, 3 novellas. It's not one per each because of the process. I'm mixing, you know, some, you know, because I was working on multiple books at the same time, and I would just put a sticky flag in the top and keep it going. I did take a picture of them all. I'm probably going to put it on Instagram. There are lots of pictures like this. Like, I think when I started book F, I was like, I think this is going to be the last notebook. I've said that before, but I really do. And I was honestly surprised that I needed G. But it's not bad. It's just, it'll be over eventually. For each individual book, I also create a folder. I've started using these sort of plasticky poly folders, 2 pockets. Inside of them, I have all of the worksheets and notes and paperwork that that is associated with each book. So this is the Earthsinger 4 folder, and it is full of stuff. Because I wanted to talk a little bit about organization today as I think about organizing not only the physical papers and folders and notebooks, but the virtual ones on the computer. So yeah, physical notebook, physical folder, usually the notebook goes inside the folder along with the worksheets. So just as an example of some of the worksheets that are in my Earthsinger 4 folder, I have my edit letter. I did get edits from my editor. I have feedback from other people who have given me feedback, and I print out the emails and stick them in the folder. I have my hand-drawn story grid, all worksheets. I have character profiles. I have a key story questions that I have cobbled together from the K.M. Weiland books. Outlines, story grid worksheets, worksheets from onestopforwriters.com, and more. Just like a sampling of everything in here. When it comes to my computer setup, I have two different sections of folders. I have the writing folder for things that are in progress, and then I have a books folder, which is for things that are published. So in my writing folder, I have an in-progress folder and then folders for every book or project that's in progress. And so I just label them Earthlinger 1, Earthlinger 1.5, et cetera, et cetera. Inside of the book folder, it has the Scrivener document. And then I also have folders for exports. So if I export a draft from Scrivener to send to someone or just for myself, I have edits where I, usually it's for when the copy editor sends the manuscript back to me or the proofreader sends it back to me. Those are edited versions. Then I have research. I have images for usually if I have cast the characters, I will put the images in there and then I'll bring them into Scrivener. I have feedback, which is its own folder for beta readers, alpha readers, notes of the people who have given me feedback who are not the official editors. And then all the other worksheets that I might, you know, these are where I keep the worksheets that I fill out if they're Word documents or that I print out if they're PDFs. So I might have like the novel planning workbook that I've talked about before, the Fool's Cap, which is a story grid spreadsheet that we use in that process, outlines, versions of the different outlines that I've gone through, character questions, the story structure planner, which is my big main spreadsheet that I use at various stages, and all of the text files full of notes that I keep. The other one for published books is called Books. That's what the folder is called. And then I give each book a numerical code so that I can sort them. So Earthsinger Chronicles is 100. So Song of Blood and Stone is 110. Whispers is 120. Breath is 115. So they'll be, I can sort them by the number. So basically, I'll put a screenshot in so this makes more sense. But inside the folder, I have folders for art, the book files, if it's self-published, that would be like the vellum files, the cover art, promo graphics, publicity and marketing, and other things like that. Media kit, if the book has its own media kit. That helps me stay organized. So when I need the cover of a book, I go to books, then 115 underscore Breath of Dust and Dawn, which is a folder, then the cover folder, and it's in there. And that is how I keep everything organized. I put all the promo graphics that I create. So usually I do those in Canva. Sometimes I'll do them in Photoshop, depending on how complex they need to be. But they all get put into the promo. When I make bookmarks and stickers and the other swag, they go in the promo folder. It's a video folder if I do like a video trailer. For the self-published books, I have a folder for ARCs. And like I said, I have the actual book files, which is where I store the vellum, which is how I make my ebooks. And if there's a print version, I've started using vellum for the print versions too. So that is how I organize my digital assets. And I think it's important to have an organization system. Having the numerical codes for each book has been super helpful because I have used that in the book publication database. So this is something I talked about many moons ago that I have finally, yay, done. I created a publications database to hold all of the information about all of the books that are published. And I'm going to do a separate video, not a podcast on it. So hopefully this week I will be able to get that done. So if you're on YouTube now, make sure that you're subscribed. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, there will be a link to my YouTube channel in the show notes and go ahead and subscribe to that if you're interested in learning about how I'm making this database. And I'm using Notion, which is an application that is great for this kind of thing. I had to redesign what I was doing several times, which is why it took so long from when I had the idea to actually pulling the trigger on it, because I built it and it was too complicated. And then I rebuilt it. And part of it was just the learning curve of what the best way to do this in Notion, in the software that I was using. But I finally, crossing fingers, have a good way to do it. And to the point of the the publication database is to keep track of. For me, I have multiple versions of the books from multiple publishers. So I self-published, and then there was the hardcover, and then there was a special edition of Song of Blood and Stone. It's to keep track of the ISBNs, the buy links for all the books, the descriptions, blurbs, quotes, reviews, everything that you might need in one place. So I have been using Evernote for it and just keeping everything in one big Evernote document, but it's not a good way to track things. Like if you have sold foreign rights and if you have foreign versions of the books, you know, audiobook was going to have different links than your ebooks. You might have sold audio rights to a different company than the ebook publisher is, like things like that, keeping track of all of that and having one place where everything lives so that if I have to unpublish something or if I get my rights back on something in the future, if I pull something down from KU and make it wide or pull it down from wide and put it in KU, having links to where everything is, especially for the self-published stuff, because I'm using Draft Digital as an aggregator to publish to multiple places. And then I'm also using Publish Drive for some things, and I'm going direct to Amazon, and sometimes I'm direct to Kobo, sometimes I'm not. Like, there's all of this information which is in my head, and as I have more books, having it in my head is not going to be a workable long-term solution. So I'm going to, yes, have that video, and then I think I can make my Notion template public, and I'm going to do that too. So if you would like to have it, it will be available at some point in the very near future. And you should be able to use the free version of Notion for this. If you are already using Notion, the free version has some limits. So I actually had to start paying for it, but it was like $48 a year, which isn't bad for. I'm going to try to, as I move forward, move a lot of the stuff I'm using Evernote for currently into Notion and try to stop using, and also some of the Trello. I use a lot of different software and I really would like to consolidate it. So this is step one in that process. All right. So that is it for me for this week. My goals are to finish my planning of the Requiem of Silence revision and start the actual words on the page work of the revision. And then as I do that, I will have to adjust the schedule of the next 2 months. And I'm excited about it, even as I'm a little bit daunted. But I hope that you have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and if you are a visual learner, watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would love a rating and review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, including Too Stupid to Live, go to frolic.media/podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Becky Feldman here, and I am Too Stupid to Live. And do you want to hear something crazy? I also host a comedy podcast called Too Stupid to Live. How did that happen? I have no idea. Anyway, on Too Stupid to Live, I am joined by some hilarious guests where we review romance novels $5 and under. And we have covered the gamut of romantic fiction, from historical romances to dinosaur erotica, which, you know what, now that I think about it, I think that's like also a historical romance. Anyway, each episode, we go on this engaging journey. I've had Sarah McLean, the fabulous author, talking about the power of romance, to Nick Weiger of the Doughboys podcast, reading a sexy excerpt in the voice of Elizabeth Holmes. That one still gives me very sexy nightmares, but I just can't get enough. So TSTL puts out 2 episodes a month, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts.